Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Dapsack for another edition of Star Wars Rant. Meet a guest. Ranking things in Star Wars, pretty simple. And a man who is simply one of the best Star Wars commentators, pundits, and fans out there. Not that it's a contest, by the way, but it's Joseph Scrimshaw.
I am happy to win the contest with myself when I wake up in the morning and say, can I be the best commentator that I can be? I try to win every day at myself.
I started to talk, and I was like, nah, we, you and I don't like that vibe of fans of note. We're just all fans of Star Wars, but you are one of my favorites to talk Star Wars with and rank Star Wars with. And Joseph, we've got a pretty fun one here today. And folks, if you're listening, go along with us on this one here. This is the fantasy special editions for the sequel era that we would like. These are our dream scenarios here of, let's say, the sequel era. All films so far, Rogue One, Solo included, 7, 8, and 9, leaving out the TV shows for right now, the films, let's say 10, 15 years. Lucasfilm says, hey, you know what's kind of a tradition in Star Wars? Special editions. What would we want to be added in? Maybe scenes put back in. Totally dream fantasy scenes that don't exist, that weren't shot, but could be in the movie. And Joseph, we're going to start there, but also, really want to strike the right tone here. This is complete fun in celebrating these movies.
Yeah, absolutely. You sent me this idea, and I was like, this is so much fun. I think partially because of just the tradition, the history of the special editions. You know, when the first special edition of the original trilogies came out in the theaters in 97, that was both like a moment of huge fan explosion of you know, I had one fan who's like, here are George Lucas's three sins. So like there was umbrage, right? There was fan anger. Mm. That was kind of the beginning of, but I want the Star Wars the way I grew up with it, period. And I don't want the creators to touch it. But then there was also, as we always say, playground and bar conversations. For me in 97, it was bar conversations of, which changes did you like and why and how did they make a difference? And so it was like a really fun conversation. And when you sent me this idea, that was what is exciting to me about it, of like, if something like this happened, what would be the changes that might actually make a difference? And you might actually go, oh, wow, yeah, you know, that really adds this new spin. Or what would be those changes they added some more scenes in Mos Eisley, or even like they added the windows in Bespin. Like, it's just aesthetic for the most part. It doesn't change anything. And then, like, you know, Lucas kept making those changes into the different home video releases. And the one that always jumps out at me is there are more rocks for R2 to hide behind, you know?
Yeah.
So it's special. That's all to say, just the idea of special edition changes has this history of a little bit of weight, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. No, that's a great way to say it. Yeah, absolutely. Han shot first. Those T-shirts, the campaigns, the anger about that dominated a lot of the 1997 conversation. But those movies, we celebrate those special editions. You and I love a lot of things in them because they brought a lot of new fans to Star Wars. So it's kind of the spirit we're doing, because for every Han shot first screaming match people would have, often with themselves in 1997 or at the bar or playground, there was also the little things you just said, man. Wow, but I do kind of like how the X-Wings look. Oh, man, it's great to see Biggs again. Cloud City, you mentioned, all those kind of things. So
Wampa, quality Wampa shots.
Quality Wampa shot, indeed. So that's the spirit of this conversation. We're going mostly with scenes. We didn't even really touch the aesthetic stuff that might come up in the conversation, but also, you know, a little bit of a different era. And we're not too far off of this. Do the math. 1997. You are just about 14, 15 years from Return of the Jedi. So as you pointed out in a recent episode, we're not too far. Maybe what, 4 years away from the 10th anniversary of Force Awakens. Oh, that scares me. So these could be upon us sooner than later. We're approaching this the spirit of fun and celebration, as we always do here on Force Center and Star Wars Ranks. So, Joseph, we're going to begin our fantasy special editions for the sequel era list with your number five.
My number five starts with one that has a little bit of comedy to it, but also has a little bit of sincerity to it. I'm going to The Force Awakens, and I'm saying, let's make it political.
Yes.
Let's lean into making it similar to the prequels. This is a thing that people discussed when Force Awakens came out, that there was a little bit of uncertainty about what was actually going on, the politics. Is the resistance actually supported by the Republic or not? How did the First Order just get started and nobody really paid attention? All those kind of things. And I have always been in the camp of like, you know what? It's there in the crawl if you can figure it all out. But I also have always thought that there was definitely a big push when Force Awakens came out and was being advertised of, don't worry, we know some fans back in the day didn't like the prequels. This is going to be more like the original trilogy. So I think there was a concern not to start with, you know, votes and taxation and that kind of thing. But in my special edition, there's absolutely a huge scene like that. There's a character. This is my scene. Corsella makes her case to the Senate. I want a full Senate scene. I want to see, you know, when the New Republic formed and they're like, well, let's not do the discs again. That's just bad memories. What did they make the Senate room look like? We got the Chancellor Villachem character. Corsella was a character who was a partner and aide of Leia. She gets sent to make the one last case to try to talk the Republic into, you really need to take the First Order seriously. We have that lingering shot when the Hosnian system is destroyed of Corsella and Chancellor Villachem on a balcony. So I think maybe we have even two scenes, one in the Senate and then one more in Chancellor Villachem's office right before this happens. But I think that would be an interesting and fascinating scene. It would tie back to the prequels to really make it political. And I think it would actually really sell the idea of The Force Awakens and the First Order in particular, this idea that the First Order is a political entity that has kind of pushed into the galaxy as we know it a little bit. And the government, the Republic, just isn't functioning super well again. And they really just want to take it as like, yeah, 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 there's some loudmouths kind of cosplaying the Empire, but yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves and call everything that scares us the Empire. Let's not go overboard with that and see that denial, see that appeasement, see that great tradition that does happen in real life of people not wanting to admit the possibility of conflict is here, because it's so understandable to not want the conflict. And that's Leia's bravery, right? To say like, the problem is here. I don't want it to be here. It's incredibly personally painful for me because my son is involved, and it'd be painful even if it wasn't. But there's no point in looking away from the truth. Let's go. So to have that kind of Coruscella, let's look at the truth versus the, maybe, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
from the government and frame it entirely political. You know, make it so the First Order aren't paying their taxes. As political as possible to connect it to the prequels.
This is old school Force Center listeners are probably like, oh, here goes Kat about Coruscella. This used to be one of my favorite things to talk about back in the day, Joseph. Look, it's true. Let's do the business of it, the politics, maybe cut it out. And I would say, I get it. I get what they maybe thought they needed to do making this film. But that state of the galaxy that we always would talk about, that phrase would be brought up a lot coming out of episode 7, all the discussions around it of just kind of want to maybe a little better explanation of and everything. And we don't intend to say this is any kind of correction. I think the movie stands on its own. And I think you can read the supplemental material, start and go into 7, 8, 9 or watch it, even Star Wars Resistance, the TV show. And you get this sense, you get the feeling. All this
absolutely
is still, yeah, it's still present, but it's such a potentially great scene. It's so great, you know, that even JJ has said that, yeah, you know, they decided that the Leia introduction on Takadana was more powerful than some of the stuff they'd shot with Coruscella earlier, but that it just kind of, it did make the Hosnian Cataclysm sequence a little less emotional than maybe it could have been. And that's something they said later on. So there you go. JJ's even thinking special editions down the line.
Exactly. And I agree with JJ. I those deleted scenes are great, but I think that Leia introduction is just golden. So yeah. I would not want the scene of Leia sending Coruscella. I just want Coruscella being like, I am an emissary of Leia Organa. Listen to me, you know, and make it all about Coruscella yelling at Chancellor Villachem.
Yeah, and the spirit of our list is, yes, there's a lot of deleted scenes out there, but these are completely, we're going back in time to shoot some of these scenes in this discussion. So Coruscella, Maisie Richardson Sellers played her in that brief second, but it's a character that means so much more. This is a great list. And, Joseph, do you think in an alternate reality, say Force Awakens comes in 2016 and Rogue One somehow comes out first, would never have happened, but do you think they would have been a little bit more confident to include some more political State of the Galaxy world building in episode 7?
I think so. Just because of the changes in the real world. I think also, Rogue One is political at its heart. We've got that, briefing scene, obviously, that nobody's talking about taxation and trade routes and the things that some people feel dry. I also just feel like there was a kind of a tipping point where the prequel generation got old enough to say, like, look, that's our Star Wars, period. Yeah. We're loud and proud and we're here.
Loud and proud and here. So great way to start our list. The Ballad of Coruscella. Coruscella makes her case to the Senate, and maybe like the offspring of Noor Jebel would be there going, it's nothing.
I think he's still there. I think old Noor Jebel is still there in the Senate denying things.
That'd be good. We are off and running here. Fantasy Special Edition of the Sequel Era. We're going to my number 5, and we are going to Solo, A Star Wars Story. I'm going towards the end of the film. I love the end of that film. I love the beats. I love the game. I love Han getting one over on Lando and getting the Falcon. And then I've always thought one of the more emotional scenes is just them at the end, Chewie and Han about to start their adventures together as smugglers. We know where it ends up. And they put their hands on the hyperdrive and launch the Falcon into light speed. Right. I love that. I've always loved that. But I wouldn't. So I'm not going to take away from that. But I would love a little bit before that of the actual just a little beat, a little scene of Chewie and Han moving into the Falcon, like bags. You get that bunk, clear out these capes. Lando could be there upset, trying to win the Falcon back, add some extra tension to their story, and just have give me the Han and Chewie looking around going, hey, this is going to be home, almost to mirror the Chewie we're home thing later on. I don't need the direct emotional connection. I get it. It's there. But I just Han coming in like a kid moving into his dorm room. Just kind of dropping a duffel bag and taking over. It's not deep. It's not super emotional, Joseph. It's not political at all. It's just the dude's got his RV and he's ready with his buddy to move on and move forward.
I really like this because there's so many great beats of comedy that I can see in my head, like character building comedy of just there's this image of Chewie just throwing the capes at Lando. Like Chewie's still in the Falcon. Down the landing platform, catching that. And you're right. There's like an emotion to them, like kind of taking it in, you know, and like, yeah, we're here. And like, there's almost some like maybe Han, like, you know, whips off his jacket and like throws it on the floor. And Chewie just looks at it like, oh, this is the way it's going to be. This is a flying dorm room that I'm stuck in.
Yeah, Chewie having that little growl. Yeah, like I said, I love how it plays. I love it. It just there's something hilarious to me when they actually, you know, solo diving into this, like, look at what Lando did with this wonderful ship and look at what Han ended up doing. It's something that always resonates again. And me being a Han guy, I would love to have a ship that looks like Lando's, but realistically, I'd make it look like Han's version.
Yes, I would very much be like Han too. Of like, no, I did this on purpose. So people underestimate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you
move totally those a choice.
Piles. Yeah. Don't move those piles. I know everything in those piles. Don't move them. Don't move them.
I haven't cleaned my kitchen because I don't want people to, you know, I want people to underestimate my kitchen and be surprised by what it can do.
That's what they do. That's what they do. Oh man. So that's my list. It's not deep. It's just fun. Solo, Chewie and Han move into the Falcon, which means we're up to your number four.
My number four is also not particularly deep, but watch, I'll probably start going on about the great depth of it. Cause that's what I always end up doing. But my number four, I'm going to The Last Jedi. I'm going to one of those very nerdy moments of like, but I liked that thing and I wanted it to be okay. I want a scene in The Last Jedi that confirms the survival and the possible return of one of the most important characters in the sequel trilogy. And that is Finn and Poe's jacket. I want confirmation of what happened to that jacket. Cause that was like one of my, like, I think it was probably like late at night, like maybe going to bed. Like after the first viewing of Last Jedi and processing all my feelings about the film, really thinking through all the Luke stuff, really starting to see how all the ideas hook together and just making mad notes for our eventual discussion and, you know, getting up early and seeing it again. And really, I think that was like on my list in my mind of things I wanted to check when I went back to see it again of like, is there any little scene in the background where you see that, you know, when Finn and Rose get off the First Order shuttle, they actually do still have the jacket? Because obviously, you know, Finn takes it off to dress up in the First Order disguise. He's still got his same undershirt on. And I'm just like screaming in my mind, like, Poe sewed that up for you. It's so cool that the holes from Kylo's wounds are stitched together. Yeah. Where is it? So what I want is just, and this is probably my most like actual special edition George Lucas, like, yeah. I just want, after the supremacy has blown up and you're in awe of what's happening to Holdo, just one tiny little shot where you can see the jacket drifting out in space among the wreckage. And you don't know what's going to happen to it, but you know it survived. And, you know, years from now, it's going to end up in some places like Maz's basement.
Yeah. Oh God. Like, yeah, this is great. I want this to flow. This is like Indiana Jones in his hat, right? Where just, you don't need to question it. The wind blew it back to him. Don't you worry about it. The jacket floating down, surviving atmosphere, atmosphere reentry. I don't care. I want it just to appear. The force will guide the jacket home.
Yeah, no, look in whatever year it is, 2048, that we've got a film starring Finn's child.
Yeah.
And they have reason to go to Crait, and like, this is where my dad almost died, almost threw it all away. Hey, what's this?
Yeah.
He discovers the jacket.
The jacket. Just a short story of the jacket all through the ages.
Exactly.
It'd be great. No, it's great. I can always see, you know, exterior space, a lone jacket floats to the surface.
This even could be like a real, just like nothing actually changes in the film. There's just, if you really, really zoom in, you notice that got put in the background. Like could not even be a new shot. This could just be added to an existing shot.
Love it.
How did you feel about the loss of the jacket? Did it ever bother you?
I wouldn't say it bothered me, but I really do love the symbolism of the jacket and what it meant between the two, and, you know, Poe's overbite. I mean, lip bite. I mean, come on, who doesn't love that moment? So it's something like that when you focus on it, it does mean more to me than I think I would even think on the surface, if that makes sense. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it would be a cross between a real sentimental thing, but also a fun runner to me, if the jacket just survives, keeps going, and it keeps getting beat up and re-sewed and dirty. Doesn't matter to me. Just, it's there.
Yeah, I think it is just that great moment. It looks good on you, and then the fact that Poe fixed it up for Finn. It's like this symbol of their friendship, you know. And even Rey got to wear it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. They're tracking the jacket even in Force Awakens. Especially the end of the movie is kind of fun too.
Yeah, so that's my number four. The jacket lives.
The jacket lives. Love that. Well, my number four is also from The Last Jedi. We didn't set a rule where we had to have one from each movie, but it's kind of where your mind goes. So I was thinking about Last Jedi and where to dive in and what's a little piece of story that might still be out there. And I went with this idea. One of my favorite descriptions on the old Wikipedia there, and it might even be from an official source too, from a book, I do believe. Yeah, The Last Jedi Visual Dictionary. Of course, Ken, of course. But the wonderful show Data Bank Brawl that we used to do regularly, it'll be back in a way at some point. Friends, don't you worry. We get asked that question a lot. But Joseph, your show Data Bank Brawl also always put a spotlight on the wonderful weirdos in the galaxy and the characters in the background and little side stories that could exist, and Master Codebreaker and Lovey, the great scene in Canto Bight. A lot of people don't love it. The music cue, Justin Theroux's cameo, just the fact that he wasn't the Codebreaker that ends up on the mission. All those things. We get it. I've always loved it. It's something about it. I like Canto Bight. I like the high society kind of atmosphere. There's this little line that says Lovey was also carefully studying the Master Codebreaker in the hopes of usurping his title.
That's right.
What? So this doesn't add anything to the movie. It doesn't. Give me a beat where all the camp, maybe the father years are running through something. I'm not suggesting she kill him, Joseph. I'm not suggesting that, but maybe I've also been watching a lot of the Daniel Craig Bond movies. I've just did the Bond rewatch there recently here. So maybe I'm not opposed to some poison or something. A femme fatale doing some a dirty deed there. I wouldn't be upset if she just took him out. I'll just say took him out. You fans can decide what you want to do with that there. But Lovey usurps the Master Codebreaker. Just a little side story, a little extra beat. Maybe she's got a look in that scene that we don't really see, that she's just like, this guy, the time has come. I've been playing him. I'm a double agent. I'm gonna become the Master Codebreaker because I know I can. And then we see it and it happens and Ken is happy. And I didn't need it. I didn't walk away out of that movie going, you know, great movie. Really would have loved more with Lovey killing Master Codebreaker. But in thinking about it and digging in, it's one of the fun little things that could be there. It's a side story. You know, when we get that from a certain point of view, the Last Jedi novel, this might be a story and I'll finally be happy. But that's what I want. Lovey So usurps the master codebreaker.
This is such a great one. This is such a strange intersection of things that have been on my mind. Star Wars, as always. I've been doing a rewatch of David Lynch films. Justin Theroux has a large role in Mulholland Drive, my favorite Lynch film, which is he's great in that. And he plays a guy who is losing control constantly. So I can picture him doing this.
Right.
But I've also I've been rewatching the whole Bond series with my wife. Can't wait to get to Daniel Craig. But this is really fun that detail is in there, right? Because it's a Bond pastiche up to a point, right? Of the high roller, the mm-hmm. fancy, elegant guy that there's a little bit of Bond influence in that music that not everybody likes. But it's definitely got this energy is Lovey what Master Codebreaker thinks of as like a Bond girl? Is she just on his arm, or is she actually, like you're saying, a double agent? That's such a great Bondian twist. I'm glad that detail is in the visual dictionary. Yeah. Here's what I think is happening. I think that Red Palm Bloom was actually planted by Lovey, and it's got a lethal shock in it. So I think... I'd be happy with, you know, our heroes get arrested and then the scene comes back to them and you see Lovey like push a button on her wrist and then Master Codebreaker gets shocked.
Yeah.
Falls over on the table.
And just chips everywhere.
Yeah. And she takes his winning and just saunters out.
Yeah. Then we get the Lovey a standalone story later on.
Yeah. And then Neeper's pan pick, the private detective can run over again. What's happening?
Neeper's is on the case. I forget the voice we probably assigned to Neepers in the data bank brawl we did with Neepers, but
I can't remember either. But
it's wild, it's crazy. I love Canto Bite. I know it's not for everyone, but give me more. So that is my number four, Lovey and the Master Codebreaker, which means we're up to your number three.
That's a great number four. My number three, I'm going now to Solo, a Star Wars Story. And I really took inspiration from one of the most controversial changes, additions, expansions to the original trilogy, Return of the Jedi, the new expanded Jabba's band scene of Jedi rocks. I think, frankly, Lulilo Primock needs the same treatment. I think that there needs to be I love, you know, the song that's there. It is absolutely great. It should absolutely stay. But then there should just be a whole other Lulilo Primock song. No offense to Arodia Ventifoli.
No.
But I think that I think when the heroes come back, right? We don't really there doesn't seem to be much going on in the yacht, right? I mean, we see them down there at the handing over their weapons, right?
Yeah.
And they're just pretty much in the office, right?
Yeah.
I really think that there should be still a party going on, but just like a much smaller one, like a much more intimate one. Oh, and this is Lulilo doing like a tortured torch song, like Frank Sinatra, One for the Road, just like My Baby Left Me kind of song, just haunting, beautiful, some sad Imperials sitting alone at the bar, turning their drinks around in their hands. You could foreshadow a little bit of what Han's afraid of, that Kira might leave him. I think we need, this is like, you know, a whole music video inserted into Solo, a Star Wars Story.
I'm here for it in a big way. That weirdo Lulilo Primock, it remains one of my favorite characters and experiences in seeing a Star Wars movie, only because of your hype, which we've discussed many times on the show. I totally get it. I just can't explain the joy I felt knowing that I had the chance to see it slightly before you, and I just knew the joy that was going to hit you later on. I'm happy for a friend when they become joyful. So give me more of the story, what he was, a torch song. You say you're more familiar with the Sinatra world or those styles, but that's a great, I've never really heard that term. I love that. I'm a big fan of you too. So two shots of happy, one shot of sad, which was their Sinatra tribute song. Give me something like that. Give me something to start with. Make it, yeah, like an intimate VIP, just a few people around, all, you know, sipping their drinks. Chewie can be their double fist if we need him back for that. I love everything about this.
Yeah, that'd be so great. And, you know, I'll get you some Sinatra Torch Song albums here at some point. I'm very happy for you that you're in a good, solid relationship. But I should have got you these albums earlier because because the way it worked back in the day is he would have a swing album that would be mostly happy. And then he would have a saloon album with the Torch Songs that would be just all just devastating heartbreak, and that's the kind of song I want for Lilo Primark. Great to listen to when you've had a breakup.
Oh, that's the best. If we can have a Star Wars version of the Smokehouse Restaurant, like we have out
here. Exactly. That'd be great. That's my number three.
Great number three. Great number three. All right, we are going to my number three, and we're moving on to Rogue One for me on my list here. And I actually had a couple options here, so some will show up in honorable mentions. And I went with this one. Rogue One, Cassian Andor, and Shirt Emway have a talk, have a little extra beat about faith and purpose and why they're all here. We love all these characters in Rogue One, and never to take anything away from the movie, but there's some things that you might have learned in the Rogue One novelization, or even Rebel Rising, the YA novel by Beth Revis. You know, Catalyst always gets brought up. It makes the movie better. I don't think that's a correct statement, but the part of the problem is just there's so much wonderful information that you can't dump into every movie. It's just not how it works. One of my favorites, and I think one of our favorites here at Force Center, is Cassian growing up kind of as a separatist in a way, his family and a different view, and Cassian's view on Jedi and the Force, and maybe him not having even a chance to believe in it, maybe not understanding it, and maybe turning around some of the things he experienced as a kid in a war that he had no choice to be about being in, and how it transferred into his beliefs on those types growing up. And we get his kind of disparaging kind of tone towards the Wills, Baze and Sherritt when we first meet them. Rogue One isn't necessarily directly about the Force, but you and I would argue, but all of Star Wars is about light and dark and the choices every day that leads you down those paths. So having maybe a chance to talk right before battle, a little bit of a Gandalf talking to, Pip or Merry before the big war, just having this kind of, you know, bigger spiritual conversations in a tiny, tiny moment. I'd be there for that. Sherritt kind of discussing where Cassian is now. And maybe even that idea about, you know, you don't necessarily have to believe in the Force or what I'm here for, but you're kind of an example of it. And you're choosing that light side right now. And you're committing to this and you're making it all worthwhile. It's a bigger conversation and you might only have a couple lines to get it across, but I think I'd love to see that show up in a Rogue One special edition.
Oh, this is a great one. This is one of we've got our jackets floating in space, and then we got some deep, meaty ones like this. Now, I totally agree with you. I think some of the novels, including the little YA Guardians of the Wills book, they enhance the film, right? But yeah. I think the film ultimately does, and I've had my ups and downs with it, but I think ultimately it really stands alone. But one of the great things about Rogue One, but sometimes tantalizing, maybe verging on frustrating, is there's so much meat on the table to be explored. And one of those things is the Guardians of the Wills. It works really well, the mood of the film, the lessons of the film, the ideas of the film, that they were, you know, whatever their exact day-to-day was, whatever their exact philosophy is, it's clear that they both used to be believers. We get that line, right? About he used to be, that Baze used to be the most devout of all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, we get it that Baze lost his faith in the Force, in the old ways, in the traditions, but he hasn't lost his faith or love in Chirrut. Mm-hmm. And I think a scene like this would only enhance it of like, they're going to this battle, right? Because you're talking about they're on their way to Scarif, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're going into this battle. They clearly both have seen who Jyn is. They believe in Jyn. They've had their ups and downs with Cassian, but obviously they believe in him or they wouldn't be there. It makes sense for me of Chirrut saying, you know, where are you at, Baze? You know, or maybe even Baze pushing Chirrut of like, are you sure this is, you know, worth it, worth possibly giving up everything? And it would be great because you could even kind of leave the conversation. You could get a little hint of their relationship, of what it used to be like when they were more in lockstep. Mm-hmm. And you could have it be a little bit unresolved, because I really like that in the moment of death, it seems like Baze is willing to express belief again in the moment of Chirrut's death, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I shouldn't have left Baze out of that conversation at all. Like, he should be there as well. It's just an example of maybe Chirrut's just holding court with everyone. Gather around, non-believers. Let me tell you. But no, that's a great example. It's subtle as well. And yeah, you're right. Yeah, Rogue One, for all it's absolutely a fun experience for me. I really enjoy that movie and keep enjoying it. But that was some of the stuff that I would look at. Second act, maybe one more beat where the whole team gets together, which can be just surface level criticism, to be honest, about even just my own takes on it. But I think you're right. You're touching on some stuff that could be there. We're not saying this is a correction, but just be a fun discussion of the Force during wartime.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And you're totally right, though, to focus on the Cassian side of it, because there is that little bit of an unresolved beat of like the, you know, the Force moves darkly around somebody who intends to kill, but then he doesn't kill. And how does Chirrut feel about that? Because Chirrut does seem to be able to pride himself on sensing the truth, that people's true hearts, right?
Yeah.
So that would be a really, really great conversation I was getting obsessed with the Baze part of it, but the Cassian part of it, you're really right, of Chirrut, you know, yeah, really wrestling with, well, what is your true heart, Cassian?
What is your true heart? Answer, Andor. Answer. Maybe maybe we'll dive into a little bit of the why in the Andor series.
Yeah.
So that's my number three. We are going on to your number two. We are discussing, of course, fantasy special editions for the sequel era. Just having some fun looking at these films and seeing what else could be there. Sir, what is your number two?
My number two, I'm going to Rogue One, a Star Wars story as well. And this is one that could be its own little scene, or it could just be inserted in the background somewhere. And maybe a little bit more on the comic side. But we have this grand tradition in Star Wars of the different troops who are, you know, ready for different environments. And like in Solo, we really get to see like, OK, well, those range troopers, it looks like their necks are very warm with all the fur, and those magnetic boots really make a difference. I want that same glory for my favorite trooper, probably the shore trooper. I want a scene. We got those great images of the stormtroopers just like ankle knee deep in the water, right? Or the shore, as you might call it. beautiful shots. Wouldn't trade them for anything. But like, I want those extended, and I want like a couple of the stormtroopers to just get stuck in the sand, to fall over. And then the shore troopers, we see that their boots are designed for sand low levels of water. And they just come zipping through the beach, through the shore, and have to pick up the dumb regular stormtroopers with their dumb regular armor who can't handle beach running.
This is spectacular, because I want now like a short film on the Battle of Scarif from this point of view, where we actually get kind of it's almost like, you know, Bad Batch, Regs versus Clone Force 99, like short troopers just being like, gosh, we've got these clodhoppers around us, man.
These idiots who just don't know how to handle sand.
One's getting stuck on the, I can't move. That's it.
Yeah, I really want the shore troopers to earn their due of like, look how great we are at shores.
Yeah, yeah, this is, you know, because the snow troopers, Hoth, we get it. There's some stuff on their gear that makes it that's why they're dressed like that. Mud troopers, this is a tradition. But even my beloved biker scouts, lighter weight armor, I guess. I don't know, bigger, you know, spot the viewfinder. You can get more, you can see more with your eyes beneath those masks. I guess that's the advantage, other than maybe just the training. The classification has maybe a lot to do with that. So I get those kind of conversations, but just, yes, I love what you're suggesting. The excellence of the shore troopers on display.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the real world is just the aesthetic joy of the different troopers. But I also just like imagining that there's some, you know, basically used car salesman type who's like, no. If you want somebody to be really good on a speeder bike, they got to be dressed like this. This is an aerodynamic helmet I'm giving you here.
Yeah. 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 Oh, that's hilarious. I just see like one of the stormtroopers like, I'm taking on water. It's getting in my armor.
I'm taking on water. You got to go on without me.
Oh, that's spectacular. Oh.
Might impact the drama a little bit, but I don't care. I'm going wild. That's my number two.
Totally fantasy special edition scene. Indeed. That's a great number two. All right, Fred, my number two, I'm going to The Force Awakens. And yeah, I know. I get it, everybody. Leia and Chewie should have hugged. You know what? I'll pound a desk a little bit. And JJ has admitted, might have been a little mistake. Sorry, I was in over my head to concentrate on a bigger scene and we went some other directions. I get it, said JJ all the way back in 2015. But, and I felt they did what they tried. Rise of Skywalker, I won't even say try. I think they succeed in giving Chewie some important moments all through and last as well. But yeah. I'm going back to this moment, and I'm not saying we need the hug, by the way, in that moment. This is not my scene. My scene, though, is Leia sends off Chewbacca. This is post-death of Han, post the return, Rey, that great scene with Leia and Rey as Leia sends her off. I love that scene. It's so hopeful. It's so beautiful for that film, and great use of a lot of the Carrie Fisher saying Rey, like that pops up a lot. And I love that sequence. And I love her dress. I love the look, but so I don't want to take away from that. That's the danger of every scene we're suggesting, right? It might take away some of the flow, but in that sequence somewhere, Leia and Chewie having a moment discussing as quick as they can in the need of the film's momentum there. And keeping that in mind, but just Han's death, but also please, almost as if not directly saying it, but transfer your life debt to this person. Rey needs you. I need you to take care of Rey like you protected me on Bespin. When I sunk into your fur as Han was being lowered into the carbon freezer. I need that love and energy that you had in honor of Han and honor of the man we both loved. I need you to make sure that it's transferred to Rey because she is the most important thing for the resistance right now. There's so many other things and people that are important, but we need her to do this, and it's the Falcon, and you need to go with her, and I'm asking you to love and protect her as you loved and protect me and Han. And that's the little beat a moment, and do it in a Carrie way, do it in a Leia way. I'm sure it'd be funny, I'm sure it'd be a little snarky, but do it. Give me that moment. Water coming down my eyes in the theater. I'm crying. Give me that moment. That's what I want at The Force Awakens.
Oh, man, that's a good one. That's a good one. I love the way you're concentrating on these images of Leia pressing her face into his fur, you know, part friend, defender, part just giant hanky that Chewie is. That is a great image. But can you imagine the potency if, you know, she related, you know, how much Chewie always watches over everyone. You were there for me when I needed you. And like this girl, Rey, she's alone. She's alone like Han was when you found him, you know, and really connect to that. And then you get to see those moments in Solo. Wow.
That's a great line. Yeah. Let's dump that in there. That great line. Just dump it in the bucket there. No, that's great. I love that. It's that emotional canon we always celebrate here at Force Center. I'd love to do that. Ah, man.
It's a great setup, too, because it just, Chewie really gets a lot of great moments in the sequel trilogy, I think. Great comedy moments in The Last Jedi with the porg business, but that great moment is people memed of, like, Chewie being, like, the uncle or, you know, the stepdad who's just like, you want to go where to meet what boy? Mm. All right. I'm not sure about it, but I'm there for you. Yeah. I'll take you. And that energy and like that, you know, that great joke of like tell Finn and Chewie roars like, oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
Yes.
That real sense of connection between Rey and Chewie, that Chewie's really looking out for Rey, it would be awesome.
Great. So that is my number two. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, some honorable mentions and then our number one choices for a scene, an idea, a concept in our fantasy special editions for the sequel era. Stick around here at Star Wars Beat.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com, that's JENILANDA.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to Star Wars Ranks. Ken Napsok here with Joseph Scrimshaw, and we are talking about special editions for the sequel era, a completely daydream kind of idea here. We're not saying these are corrections that need to be made. The movie missed these points. We're saying, man, we love these movies so much. What else could be in there to just make our love that much more robust? So, as always, Joseph, we're going to probably have some special editions, things that were so, so close. And we're going to talk about those. Well, I said special editions, some honorable mentions, but they're special to our hearts. What do you have? What almost made your top five?
Yes, these are honorable mentions that someday in a special edition of this podcast can be added back into the main list. Yeah, I went to The Rise of Skywalker. And like we were saying at the top of this podcast, you know, we were having some serious ones, some fun ones. If this was an all serious list, like for sure stuff you'd like it tweaked. This is probably my biggest serious one is more with Rose in The Rise of Skywalker in general. But in particular, I'm going to, there's this moment that I sort of daydreamed about. The moment exists in the film, but then I daydreamed about it being expanded a little bit. And then the exact daydream I had pretty much is in the novelization. So maybe it was in the script at one point. Okay. Maybe it was even shot. So it could even be, wow, it could be added back. Big picture, you know, I think there should have been more of Rose. I think they should have made a bigger deal out of making it super concrete and clear that it is her engineering brilliance that figures out the weakness of the Sith Star Destroyers. I think she should have had a hero moment or more of an arc, all those things. But the little moment that I want is I would love it clarified when Finn is telling Rose, you know, no, you get in the shuttle. I'm staying here. I have to do this. Mm. And in the film, it seems like she's just concerned about him. But there's a great moment in the novelization of like, you know, I'm doing what you taught me this time. It's not like crate. I'm not running forward out of anger to, you know, fight something I hate. I am doing this with peace and purpose. I am saving what I love. I am making sure that they can't ever take another kid the way they took me and Janna, you know,
right.
In the way they took your sister, you know, ultimately.
Right.
I'm saving what I love. I know what I need to do. I think Finn just expressing that to Rose, even though it's Finn doing the talking.
Yeah.
It's this nice bow in their relationship. It gives a like great strength and validation to the journey that they went through together in The Last Jedi.
I couldn't agree more. Well said, needed. And that would be a great spot to put it back in.
Yeah, absolutely. So going from there to the not as serious, mm-hmm. Kind of serious. The other incredibly small thing, getting into the spirit of incredibly small changes, where you have to Google, like, was that in there? The Rise of Skywalker as well. I would like, Ken, this would make all the difference in the world to me, a close-up of Hux's corpse.
Yeah. Right.
I love a Hux's journey. It's small, but it makes perfect sense to me. I love it because it is the opposite of Rose's advice. The way he says, like, I don't care about you winning. I need Kylo Ren to lose. He is just fighting what he hates. You know, Kylo's treated him like a dog and he wants revenge. So his story really works for me. But the speed with which he's dispatched,
right.
I feel like just a shot lingering on his face with just a little bit of John Williams music to just kind of drive home of like, see, this is what vengeance gets you.
Yes. Yes. Maybe his tongue can be out like Snoke's.
A slow lull. Yeah. To just give some respect to this character, to slowly watch his tongue fall out.
Yeah. A little, it's not justice for Hux, but driving the point home for Hux, hashtag. I don't know.
Just a moment for the whole audience to go, yep. Oh, Hux. My next one is also a little bit more on the comic side and still involves General Hux. I'm going back to The Force Awakens. When The Force Awakens came out, we had some questions about the nature of Kylo Ren's helmet. Does he have a closet full or is it just the one? Then the destruction in Last Jedi, the reconfiguration into the scarred version in The Rise of Skywalker suggests to me that there is only one helmet, which means I need, quote unquote need, joking need, a scene in The Force Awakens where Hux finds Kylo Ren out there bleeding in the snowy forest, and Kylo Ren's like, gotta go back for my helmet. I left it on the bridge.
Get that helmet. Get that helmet up off the floor.
Exactly. And then just a scampering shot of Hux sighing and things exploding all around him as he goes out onto that dangerous bridge to get Kylo Ren's helmet for him.
It's heavy. It's hard to lift. How heavy is this thing?
He's slipping. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that would make all the difference in the world. So those are my first couple, but I want to bat it back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Only a few for me. I had it. This is one of those honorable mentions where you have to kind of cut yourself off. We could be doing this all day.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to go to Rise of Skywalker first. This is only for me. Okay. This is only for me. I'm sure other people would appreciate it there. But as Snap Wexley, Temin Snap Wexley, is shot out of the sky, it's a tough moment. And, you know, he's married in the comics, in the Poe Dameron comic. We know that. We don't really get to know his wife on screen. We don't see her at all. But one other character out there that is it's big in my heart, and his death affected me in a big way back in the day. So this death, I want it to be connected. As Snap Wexley is falling out of the sky over Exegol, knowing that he's checking out of this hotel called life, I want him to yell for Mr. Bones. Mr. Bones, coming home.
Oh, I would love, you know, a whole remix of the whole Citizens Fleet General section of The Rise of Skywalker. That is, this is here to confuse viewers who've never read books or comics.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, yeah, we could add that right now to both of our lists of just the ships come out of, and we do that, what they did in the novel so well. Right, well, Ray Carson did this so well, of all the characters and resistance characters, everything. Yeah, we could have done that in the movie. It could be, and you're exactly right. Everyone would be like, huh? Who?
Yeah, no, you get the version where Snap screams for Mr. Bones. And then, you know, Wedge shows up, and at first he's like, nice shooting, great flying. And then a moment later, he's like, my son.
What am I? And I think Nora's passed away by this point, right? Or no, is she? I can't remember. Resistance Reborn, the every detail. But yeah, Nora Wexley. Have Kaz. Have all of them. Jason.
Have them all. Jason Syndulla, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Let's get that Mandalorian fighter with Grogu in it, for sure. Let's go for it. Get them all in there.
Do it. Let's do it. Another one I want is in Rogue One there. And that is, again, I love the ending of Rogue One. Special edition, you could, could maybe redo some of the technology around the Leia at the end of Rogue One. That could be something that would be keeping in the tradition of Star Wars special editions, for sure. But in that sequence, again, you don't want to destroy the momentum. I don't think you end on them. I think you end on Leia saying hope. I think that's powerful. But as everyone's running down the halls, everyone's getting in position, and Tilly's is heading to the cockpit there, the deck, we see 3PO and R2 and U3PO. Making their way down the hallway, scared and scampering, trying to get to safety. Just give me that beat to tie it directly to the beginning of New Hope. Do we need that? No. Do I need that? Yes. That's what I want.
That would be pretty cool, since you did get the shot of R2 and 3PO, and then there was the, like, okay, now they had to get on the Tantive IV, right, before it was loaded. So that was before Raddus left, right? Like, yeah, definitely a lot of that. Would you want U3PO to see C3PO and say Echuta, or is that stealing the thunder from E3PO?
You know, you could never have too many Echutas in Star Wars. Like, there's not enough. So yeah, I'm there with that.
Excellent. That's a great one. I just love the image of it.
Yeah. And then sticking with Rogue One, I'll kick it back to you here as well. But I we did the Cassian Sherritt base stuff. I originally had in that slot the idea of Cassian and Jyn having one more beat on the way to Scarif. And it might have been the same kind of conversation about purpose and why they're there, and both of them addressing things in the past. And I think we really do get some, you could understand the Cassian Jyn stuff even when he stands up and says, you know, we're with you. We're going to go with you because I need to, you know, make sure all the horrible things I feel I've done for this rebellion before. The questionable things, the moral gray areas I've lived in. I want it to have purpose. I want it to be for the greater good. I think that's there, but having a little bit more, maybe it's a chance to work in some of the stuff where she had, the life she led had to do with thinking her father had abandoned her, thinking that her father joined the Empire, thinking that her father was dead, and just kind of being out there. And that's why she didn't look up, and just having a beat in a moment that, is in the spirit, kind of, I don't want to say pays off, but the when they both kind of look each other in the eyes, very close, very intimate moment before they, as they know they're kind of, they've perhaps done what they needed to do and they're going to die for it. Maybe an emotional bookend with that, if you know what I mean.
I would really, really like that. I think that would be great. I think this is partially just, clearly we really like all these characters in Rogue One and
yep.
Just want even more interaction with them, right?
Yeah, which is why I'm looking forward to Andor, even though some of these other characters probably not going to be in that series. It's potential for more things like this. So I've got one more, but I want to hear yours before we head back to our main list here.
Yeah, I got two more. One of them is also from Rogue One. we just want to add more to Rogue One. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I think it could be done. that great briefing scene with Jen, where she is resisting getting involved and having all of her rap sheet, Lyanna Halleck rap sheet read it or all that, put I Rebel back in the scene. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. People have tattoos. It's their favorite line. And it's only from a trailer. We need to get that back in the film.
Yeah. Yeah. No, You could do that all day with Rogue One based on those trailers. I mean, Krennic walking across the battlefield in the cape, all those great shots that we've seen. But that's a damn good line. I love it. It's not cheesy to me. I've just always loved it.
I think it works. I think there's a reason that it was really, really impacted. It really, really made an impact on people from just a trailer of, it kind of hinted at what we ended up discovering in the actual briefing scene of like, this isn't quite the rebellion we know yet.
Yeah. 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 I like that.
Yeah. I'd be happy with that one. That would be fun. Here's my final one. And this is one that, that people have talked about before. This could be done well, or this could be done in a way that, would be criticized because it has the same spirit of some of the insertions in special edition. But I don't want a single scene changed. I don't want a single new shot. I just want a bunch of classic aliens digitally added to the entire sequel trilogy. I just want suddenly leaning over somebody else's shoulder. There's an Ithorian in Moss's castle. Suddenly, behind a Fathier, there's a shocked Aqualish. I want a Gungan on Kajimi. I want a bunch of those classic from both original and prequel trilogy aliens, the ones we see a ton in Clone Wars and Rebels. I want them sprinkled throughout the sequel trilogy in questionably digital ways.
Yeah, even more Star Wars tradition there. Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the non-inclusion of classic aliens is both baffling to me and also completely fine. In a way, I don't spend a lot of time on it, but it's baffling. I'll use that term. And I'll stand behind that term, baffling. Just I've always thought there's a whole new, they're creating these characters and they're having fun and they're the concept art of like, let's go crazy. It's brand new stuff, new era. So I get that. So that's why I agree with you. Just adding it to what's already there.
Yeah, like I totally, totally get the desire to have new aliens, and the new alien designs are absolutely great. I would have taken a sprinkling of the classics as well. I would not want to take away a single. Yeah, let me be very clear on this. No other aliens get erased. It's just suddenly there's a Godel who walks in front of the screen or a Deveronian in the background.
Yeah, yeah, I love that idea. And then, oddly enough, I think more people would have just kind of calmed down and enjoyed some of the stuff a little bit more in a way. It was because it was a big talking point early on, right? It still probably is, but that was an early talking point of, hey, where's an Aqualish?
Yeah, exactly. Give me an Aqualish.
great, great honorable mention there. My final one here, we'll get back to the list. I'm going to Solo. And this is my idea here. Kira puts on a brave face and then takes control. Again, something I don't think necessarily we need in the film, but because I think we all enjoy this character so much, a little bit more time with Kira is something that is not a bad thing. And so after Maul and Kira, you and I are going to be working together a lot more closely. That whole scene, we've got her looking out of the window there at Han and Chewie. Great shot. Kind of a classic, almost film noir shot there. Beautiful stuff. I don't need more than that. But this idea of she knows what she's done. She now knows what she's up against. She knows why she's done some of the stuff, protect Han and take out Dryden. All that makes sense. And she knew what was going to, she now be with working with Maul. She knows what that means. And she knows maybe what she wants to do with that, but it's scary. And there's some fear. And even though she wanted to make this climb or felt she had to make this climb, she's now here. And I think it's okay for her to be somewhat afraid in that moment, but know that she has to conquer that because she's now in control. And the Kira that now is starting to reemerge in storytelling has that control. And I think as she turns around, maybe goes back to the party, maybe there's a party going on. Lilio Remux doing your second song that you want.
He's on the third song now.
Yeah, third song. And it's like I said, it's not that she's lying to herself, but she knows that, all right, I have to make this decision. I'm in control here now, and the battles in front of me are going to come, and I'm aware of that, and I know it has to be with Maul, but just give me that Kira turns it on. Just boom. All right, I am now Kira in charge of Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of great great possibilities there. I love that classic film noir vibe when she is watching the ship fly away. It's almost like a Casablanca, you know, we'll always have Kessel or Corellia or whatever they consider their best planet together.
Yeah.
But yeah, that moment. Yeah, because there's so much about Solo, again, much like Rogue One, of you just kind of want more because the characters are all so great. But ultimately in that film, they are all relating back to Han's story, right? So that moment makes sense because it's kind of her like, I don't want to have to leave him, but I need to. And he won't really know why and he might not understand, but this is for the best. So it's kind of, you know, about him. So another moment that's about her.
Mm-hmm.
It totally would be great. And it could be a great serious moment. But then when I was thinking about what you were describing it too, of like that, like, okay, I know what I did. I made my choice and I'm going to face it. Of like, if there's a moment where, you know, she turns, you know, and really straightens her shoulders, picks up Dryden's corpse and throws him out the window.
Yeah.
Like, all right, this is my ship now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about that there. Hey, you know? Just slowly, like, stuffing him out the window, like, doesn't quite fit. Pushes a foot out. Good there. Anyways, we love the character of Kira, as a lot of you out there do as well. So that's
absolutely.
All right, back to our main list here as we bring it to a close here. Joseph and I have been discussing the fantasy special edition scenes and sequences we'd love for the sequel era, having some fun, going deep, and taking it a lot of different places. We're going to my number one, so Joseph can close the show with his number one. And, well, I am going to The Rise of Skywalker, and perhaps I'm going to one of the bigger controversies of the film, Palpatine and his return, and that opening crawl, The Dead Speak. Now, I'll say this, in terms of just ranking opening crawls, if that's something you're interested in, episode 9 is not one of my favorites. I think it does its job. I think it's great. I don't have a super, super big problem with it. I just think some of the other ones are more to my liking, and I get some of the criticism of The Dead Speak, and the big answer, the big reveal of Palpatine's return is kind of buried in the crawl. Okay, I understand. I get that. So, in that spirit, Joseph, I'm saying, what if we actually hear, and I understand Palpatine's address was in Fortnite video game. I know that. But let's put that aside. I don't want anyone tweeting me. Well, they actually did in Fortnite. I have no problem with it being in Fortnite. So that's all right. Here we go. What if we actually see or hear, more importantly, I don't need to see Palpatine. I think the reveal is wonderful. I think, if we hear the address around the galaxy and see some, almost like at the end of Rise of Skywalker, where we see Bespin and Endor and kind of the citizens of the galaxy rising up. What if we see the other side of that, where now the citizens are hearing this and maybe some don't know what to make with it. You know, do they believe it? And even the resistance doesn't believe it up until maybe they have to, right? We get some of those beats later on. So Beaumont Kent explains what it is. But what if we see that, and you could even end that little sequence, that montage of you with Kylo hearing it. And Kylo and everyone's kind of frightened, and that energy and that thought that maybe, hey, we're going to be okay, and we can stand up and peace and purpose. And yes, maybe even the sacrifice of Luke, something I don't want to speak for you, Joseph, but we've talked about, like, we think Luke's message and his sacrifice definitely has value. It's there, but hey, it's easier to go hoorah and harder to actually go, let's go fight. Let's do it. And that's part of the lesson, part of what Poe's got to put out there. And that's how and why the Citizens Fleet does come together in the end. So to end my little monologue here, what if Palpatine's address shakes the very foundations of everyone around the galaxy? They're fearful. They don't know what to believe. They don't know what's going on. And the First Order, Final Order, all these things. And that momentum they thought they had is tripped up. It's covered up in a blanket of fear. And then that can lead maybe in to Kylo Ren going to Exegol, which, by the way, is still, I love that beginning. So we're not here to mess up that momentum or trip up anyone there. But you know what I mean? The fear of Palpatine returning leads to the success later on of everyone overcoming that fear to protect and serve and help everyone else in the galaxy.
Oh, I love this idea, and I'm going to write some fan fiction about Palpatine called Blanket of Fear, for sure. That, no, that's great. I love this. You could also put it when he puts out his second message, right? Because he gives a message in the film, too, right? About the Sith returning, and this is it. Like, after they've demonstrated the destructive power on Kijimi. So you could put it there, too.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of seeing flashes of terror, because it does, like you're saying, it connects to the Citizen's fleet. It's got a great power, like the montage at the end of the film or at the end of the special edition of Return of the Jedi you know, the galaxy is all connected. These things affect everybody. But man, you could have you could go to all of the aliens. You could go to the planet Ando and you could see all the Aqualish.
Yes.
Right. You could go to Ryloth and see Twi'lox. Oh, my God. Amazing. Yeah. You could go, Ken, to Naboo, right? The place where he's from, the place where it all started. And you could have a scene in a courtyard where they have that statue of Qui-Gon Jinn, and you could see the Naboo and Gungans just looking terrified and guilty of, like, this is the worst ever story of a hometown kid who made it big. The worst version of that ever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the worst. Hometown kid gone wrong.
Hometown kid makes it big, threatens to kill entire galaxy again.
I'm there for that. Yeah, great addition. You're right. Yeah, there's some other beats in the film, but just the idea, the dead speak, and what that actually meant to the galaxy. I think it's
you're right. There is a power to the initial.
Anywhere's fine with me, but I think it's there. I think you and I would agree that it it's there to a certain degree, and we've talked a lot about somehow Palpatine returned and all that kind of stuff, and we get the discussions around it that are maybe on the more negative side of that, but we kind of love it. We kind of love what it means. We always go to what things mean, so maybe we could just see that fear up front, and that is why it is my number one choice for a fantasy special edition sequence in the sequel era. But now, sir, we're up to your number one.
My number one is also going to be in The Rise of Skywalker, and this is something that would just be very emotional for me, and I think would tie the film together, tie the saga together with a little bit of prequel connection. I would be fine with, I'm fine with the film the way it is. I think it works. I think it's really great to have, you were at the beginning of the film, I'm going to the end of the film.
Right.
You have that great moment of celebration, the hug between the main three, Finn, fulfilling his chosen role of holding them all together as they hug. We got those great moments of Chewie in the background showing 3PO and R2 his medal, and then we cut right to Rey on her pilgrimage. And I would be fine if there had been like a few more little scenes there of, kind of after the party, people talking about what's next. And the main scene that I'm going to that I would consider inserting in the sequel special edition is, we know Babu Frick's there, right? Mm-hmm. Because he was in the Y-Wing.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, Babu! So, yeah.
Yay, Babu! So he's running around there, trying not to be stepped on at the party.
Yeah.
The bunch of drunken heroes. So I think slightly hungover Babu Frick, here's 3PO, maybe bickering with R2 about being sure to get his memory backed up. And Babu Frick's like, I've been in there. There's some interesting stuff going on. And I think Babu Frick scampers up 3PO, opens up the back of his head, throws a switch, and restores 3PO's entire memory.
Love it.
A corrupted backup that 3PO didn't even realize that Anakin had built in. Really go deep and tie it all together, that there's even more redundant mechanical systems of memory that even R2 didn't know about, but Babu saw when he was really in there. He flicks it back on. I'm presenting some of this in a jokey way, but here's the heartfelt part of it to me, is a moment where 3PO's full memory truly returns, which I think centers him and R2 as the storytellers, as the witnesses, as the ones who are there for all of this in different pieces and in different ways with three generations. And 3PO, you know, has some like, oh my, so much more. It all fits. And then just a moment of 3PO saying, Mistress Padme. Because I really think I would have loved an acknowledgement of Padme. We get the wonderful moment of Anakin saying, restore the balances I have, which I understand other people don't like. I really like that. I think that ties things together. I think just an acknowledgement of Padme being a huge part of this legacy somewhere in the film would have been really cool. And I think this could be a fun way to do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The full story. The full story. I used to make the joke of, what if episode 9 ends with 3PO and R2 look into the skies and 3PO says, well, and these were our Star Wars. but in some kind of actually serious way to do it. And the poor guy gets all the memory back, the wipes he's suffered all through his career. That'd be great. It'd be sweet. It'd be sentimental. And it would try, because there's so much justice for 3PO in Rise of Skywalker.
So
many moments, right? He gets it, and to have it all back, it's like, not that he didn't need to earn it and prove that but to get it all back is some sort of reward. It'd be great, and he could kind of and then the Padme thing is I do think that's something I do feel is missing from Rise of Skywalker, and I know you agree there too. So that's a great way to end. And 3PO and R2 does a beep, 3PO starts talking, and Babu's just like, hey, memories complete, hey.
Yeah. And you'd really have to cut away while it's still sweet before 3PO goes, hey, wait, there's a lot of stuff in here that would have been good for me to know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big emotional one. Want to be super, super clear for myself on all these. Some of these are like fun and comic, and some of these like, ooh, maybe that could have been. I also just like to really embrace the films for what they are. And I think it can be a fun fan conversation about, you know, what beats to add. But I also feel like the films for me largely work the way they are. And I just don't want to, it's fun. It's really fun to have the what if, and maybe I just don't want to disappear into the should have, you know?
Yeah. 100% with you. What if is pretty fun. What if is a good discussion, especially if you build it off of what's already there. What if a theme took us this way, or what if this, and the hows, as we always, and the whys, which we always feel a little more important. So yeah, I think it's a good thing to be clear at the end. This is not a should have conversation, and I think everyone listening gets it, but we want to be clear, because in this day and age, there's a lot of fist pounding on tables.
Yep.
And if you want to pound your fist on more Corsella, I'm not going to disagree with you. We have what we have. And it's also why we love celebrating the entire Star Wars saga, books, comic books, maps, coloring books. It's all there for us to enjoy. And this was a very fun discussion. Great list, Joseph. Appreciate it so much. Hey, if you're just listening, you want to find us, you want to connect with us, you can do so on Twitter by going to @ForceCenterPod, use hashtag Star Wars Ranked. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. And you can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. And don't forget, you can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Podcast available on a lot of different spots: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. The podcast wars are brewing, and everyone has their own place that they want podcasts to be, but you know where you can find us. You can also support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. If you want to see me perform comedy live, if you're on the LA area, August 31st, I will be at the Ha Ha Cafe opening up for my good pal, Daniel Bridge Gad. Joseph, where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is @JosephScrimshaw. You can check out some of my my reviews of my own action figures. Not even reviews. I'm just having fun with them. It's really been a ton of fun to look at them more closely. I just posted a little video about my Flame Trooper action figure, and I had never really realized that on the package, the Flame Trooper is shooting themselves with flames. Careful. It's hard out there being a Flame Trooper. Anyway, so find me on any of those social media, or if you want to catch up with any of my other comedy adventures, all my stuff is listed and linked on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
Do it, my friends. Do it. So until next time, and for all the aliens hanging out in Maz's castle, because we know you're there, this one's for you. Star Wars has been ranked.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.